afternoon. Thank you, too, for being here today. Is there anyone from California in the audience? Oh, okay. I don't know if I know you, but one thing I've learned today, it's not always bad going last because I've noticed that the room has almost doubled by the time it's come to my presentation, so that's great. So I want to give you a little bit of background just quickly on California Project Lean and who we are, and I want you to meet Jeremiah Douglas, because Jeremiah, at the time, was a 17-year-old high school student in San Diego Unified School District, who I was fortunate to meet, bright, young, up-and-coming student who represented a lot of the students that Project Lean was working with across the state that wasn't happy with the food that was being offered on school campuses. He thought, you know, there was too much soda and chips in the vending machines, and he couldn't get a healthy option at school. He wanted there to be opportunities for kids to be physically active before, during, and after school. And he wanted to make a difference, so he got involved in our youth advocacy programs, and he worked with other students, and he talked to policymakers, food service directors, he talked at school board meetings to change the food that was offered on campus, and he was successful at doing that. And then at the same time, Project Lean was working with parents, realizing that it's important that parents get involved in what's occurring in the school. As Marcia said, you know, we can adopt wellness policies, but if those changes aren't occurring and those healthy foods aren't being served, we need to have concerned parents that are getting involved in the district and seeing that happen. And then Project Lean also worked at even a higher level, with school board members, trying to support, you know, there was many food service directors who felt like they were worried about losing their job if they made changes. They didn't feel comfortable that if they made the changes to offer healthier foods that they would sell and they might lose money. So we worked with the California School Boards Association. We did have success, and I'll talk a little bit more about that with our state school board association, but it was a long partnership of almost 10 years of working with them and educating their school board members so that they understood the link between nutrition and health and learning, because academic achievement is what they're really focused on, and provided materials and sample policies. So all of these things, youth engagement, parent engagement, and school board engagement working together is when you can have the most opportunity for success. And so, you know, this is who we are impacting, maybe not directly in our work at Project Lean now, we provide a lot of tools and trainings for others. So today, though, I'm going to talk about recent legislation that was passed and the strategies that we used, so hopefully it can help inform you in your work when you're trying to adopt, pass, or implement policies in the states that you're working in. So I'm going to give you the end first, and this is what the legislation that we were successful at passing, and then I'll tell you the story of how we got there. But we now have legislation that requires students have access to free, fresh drinking water in schools during mealtimes. Kind of sounds like a no-brainer. You would think that water would be available, free water to students, but it's not. And in many, even low-income communities or in our Central Valley area, we don't even have fresh water for homes and much less schools. And what I want to say, I'm going to tell you this perspective of from the California Department of Public Health's perspective, from our program's perspective, more of the government angle. Marcia shared more all the partners involved, but I'm going to kind of tell you from our level how we can help make a difference. But it took many, many organizations working together and long partnerships, established relationships that we had to make this all come together. Water, you know, I'm really excited that we have this because we know water is the best way to quench your thirst. No matter what is said, it isn't sports drinks, water is the best. We know that adequate hydration helps improve brain function and it's necessary for academic achievement and health. And then we also know that it's an effective tool for obesity prevention, because what we would hope is that if students are drinking water, then they may not be drinking as much sugar-sweetened beverages and sports drinks, so less calories. And then we also have legislation that requires child care facilities to offer healthy beverages and not serve unhealthy beverages. So for example, when milk is served, it would be 1% or non-fat. They limit 100% juice to only one serving a day, which is an issue we see a lot of, you know, a lot of juice. You know, it's better than other options, but it can be a lot of calories. And so they limited that to one serving per day, and that they would serve no beverages with added sweeteners. And I just want to show you this picture because this is an actual school district, Folsom Cordova, who I happen to be a parent in, and work with the food service director there. And they provide free water. The kids love it. They fill up their bottles all day long, and it's in the food service area. And they did this, you know, one of the successes, I will say, one of the keys to success is that you really need to show that other school districts are already doing what you're asking and that it's feasible. And then those people become your case studies, the folks that speak testify at hearings. And so he was very creative, this food service director. It cost about $3,000 to install these filtered hydration stations in his schools. And LA Unified School District, another district, they provide free water to students, and it costs about $1.20 per student, or $2,000 per year per site. And then they drew a nice mural to entice students to drink the water. So getting a series of bills introduced, like I said, it took the work of many partners, and I'm just going to name a few that we've worked with for a long time. The Strategic Alliance for Healthier School Environments, they have been working in an advocate role that we can't play in government. They can talk to the governor, and they can talk to them about important issues that we should be working towards. They also have a rapid response network, so they have thousands of individuals across California that they can send out information, they can give them call to actions, and get, you know, response very quickly. And at the same time, the California Center for Public Health Advocacy, who has been doing a lot of work in this area over the years, also has a network of folks that they can respond to quickly. And they, along with the California Food Policy Advocates, sponsored the Child Care Facilities Bill and supported the water bill. But the water bill, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a minute, was sponsored by our governor. And then California CCPHA has been working for years. They were actually the ones that helped establish legislation that allowed for nutrition standards for foods and beverages in schools, some of our landmark legislation. And they've also introduced soda tax legislation. So all of these organizations, as I said, have networks, and they were able to mobilize communities across the state, and that was very important for us. We could provide educational information. We have networks too, but we could not provide any type of call to action. And so for us, it was a matter of our program becoming an expert internally. You know, we can't talk to the governor in a way, you know, throughout without going through our channels. But we kind of had a big opportunity, and it was a perfect time for us that the governor has been a longtime supporter of nutrition and physical activity, and was interested in doing something, and will be out of office shortly. So this started last year. So we were asked, as experts by the program, what were the issues that we felt should be strengthened or looked at. And so in working with our expert external partners, you know, we've been working so closely together and kind of knowing and what the issue should be, that we would point, the governor's office would ask who to talk to externally. They would talk to some of the groups I mentioned, active living research, being experts in physical activity, and they would ask us through the chain, and they would come back with the same issues were being pointed at. So it made them feel like we're hearing the same thing internally and externally, that we're making the right decision, and these are issues that we should be focusing on. At the same time, it happened for us that we were applying for the American Recovery Investment Act funds, and our program took the lead for that. And in order to even apply for that grant, you had to get a letter of support, policy support from the governor, so we were able to get that. So I feel that kind of, not that he was committing completely to doing that, but it was also, he was supporting it, and I think it started to pave the way for them to start to look at these issues. And let's see here. So issue briefs. So they came to us and they asked us to help draft their issue briefs, which was really exciting for us. I've never done that in the 12 years that I had been there. And so we provided the background and the research to kind of put the context for California on several different issues. And we provided opportunities for success, again, giving successful school districts that were already doing some of these issues, which I'll explain on the next slide. Let's see. And then when legislation was introduced, it came back down to us as the experts to be the lead on analyzing that and providing feedback. So we could look at things, you know, sometimes legislation, it doesn't always turn out to be the way that you had hoped, and things get put in there that may not, from our perspective, make sense. So it gives us an opportunity to provide that kind of technical feedback. And so we helped set the policy agenda, and the governor had a summit on nutrition, health, and obesity in February of this year, and he had six of the policy planks up here. So for us, this was a lot of stuff, you know, covering nutrition, physical activity. What I'll briefly say is that the experts were recommending that kids engage in moderate to vigorous physical activity, which is large increases of breath rate, like when you're jogging or bicycling uphill. And we're suggesting that in PE classes that students get at least 50% of PE class time engaged in MVPA, and that at least 30 minutes in after-school programs, because physical activity is just optional in after-school programs. At the same time, we put forward, you know, those were two separate issue briefs, and then we put a third one together on flexibility for funding for joint use of school facilities so that schools could partner with non-government agencies or community-based organizations and share facilities. Because of scarcity in land or maintenance cost, it was an economical win-win. And all three of those ended up getting put into one bill, which it was kind of a lot to be put in. So if there was disagreement in any one of those issues, you know, the bill would die, which it did. What ended up happening is it had a fiscal attachment to it, and it went in appropriations, and it sat there. The governor also wanted to expand his fitness program, and in fact, to 1 million participants. And he has far exceeded that by 1.3 million already, receiving donations, so that eight schools would get new gym facilities on any you know, school that they choose. And then safe routes to school. That policy plank was more because underserved communities didn't have access to safe routes to school funding, which since then our sister program has been able to work with them to help low-income communities. There was a very extensive application process, and you needed to be very resource intensive, so it was a barrier. But one of the purposes of that, even though it didn't pass, was to help codify the governor's intent and a policy so that when he is gone, this is already established. And then the other one, which I was so hoping would pass, is eliminating electrolyte replacement beverages, because in our state, we passed nutrition standards and we got soda out of schools, but there was always that loophole of sports drinks being allowed. And what we've seen with research from University of California, Berkeley, is when we took out sodas, sports drinks went through the roof. And so that had a fiscal attached to it, and they, you know, felt schools would lose money. Again, we had lots of case studies, and schools were already doing that in many cases. And then the water bill was interesting too, because there was legislation a couple years ago introduced, and the governor himself vetoed it. It was kind of for a different reason. He just felt like, why do I need legislation? Schools should offer water. But as we educated, saw the need that we needed to be able to require this. And I want to say that surveys help. Little surveys, they don't have to cost a lot, but we did a survey with the California Department of Education, and we surveyed food service directors and found out that of those that responded, nearly 40% did not offer free water in the food service area. And that was, we were told by the governor's staff that did it. You know, when they saw that, they just were astonished. So sometimes those little things can get you a long way. And then the other thing I want to say is, you know, even though ERBs didn't pass, you know, it took us 6 or 7 years to get SOTAs out of school from the very beginning. So I think it is part of paving the way. It raises awareness to the issues. You know, also thinking about the state school board associations. You know, we've been working with California School Board Association for 10 years, and when we first started working with them, they opposed SOTA out of schools bill. And we actually worked with them in a way where we did give them some funding and said, you know, let us work with you to educate school board members. We didn't say, here, could you disseminate this, which they said everybody would say to them. They said, nobody's really asked us to actually work with them and come up with messages and materials in the language that we want to provide our school board members. And so in that time, they went from opposed, then they went to neutral, and then they ended up supporting SOTAs out of school and the nutrition standards. So it does take time, but those partnerships are well worth it. And the other thing would be is that also local school districts, as you said, you know, they want to make their own decisions. So that's sort of the, is let's not have the state mandate it. Why don't we start learning from other school districts and doing the right thing so that we don't have legislation. So that is our story. And we'll see where we're at in a couple of years with a new governor. Thank you. Oh yeah, and I did want to say, there's postcards in the back. I have to give a plug for our Childhood Obesity Conference. It's the largest pediatric obesity conference in the nation. Next June in San Diego, we'd love to have you come to that. And then I on our website, we have lots of resources, but we've developed a lot around physical activity and MBPA, as I mentioned, and joint use. So if you're interested in any of those, let me know.
Well, thank you. You've heard a lot about lessons learned, and we're going to have some great opportunity now for questions. Will the other two panelists come up, and you can take the three chairs up here and come right up to the microphone, and let's ask some questions. Yes, sir.
Bobby, from Miracle County, Arizona. The question for the last speaker on the water, that's fascinating. Have you run into the issue, especially in the upper grades, of really short time frames between classes? I've heard from a number of students that, oh yeah, none of us drink any water from the time we get up in the morning until after school, because they give us 3 minutes between classes and we don't.
Hang on, we don't have a microphone that we can pass, so just talk loudly, please.
Can you hear me? Okay. So, you know, what some schools have done is they have policies where the only thing you can drink in the classroom is water, so I think that's a really good one for schools to think about doing, so that, because they don't even like going to the bathroom during class, either.
But if they don't give them a chance, if they don't give them passes to go to the bathroom,
while the next person's coming up to ask a question, you all touched on this, but I thought I would just be more pointed. Can each of you, in succession, just come up with a 3 or 4 sentence projection as to what is happening next in your probably in your set of goals for what you want to happen at least in by the end of 2011?
For us, we're really switching at having a determinants of health approach, and there are some national efforts to look at the whole individual. Even here in Colorado, we have a demonstration project from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So looking comprehensively at individuals and communities, not just siloed issues. So that's where we're directing our efforts.
And in Tennessee, we've undertaken lobbying for many labeling, and it passed in Nashville. We took it to the state. I think it passed the legislature and the governor vetoed it. So, but now with the health reform, that's part of health reform, so we're hoping that the health reform continues and we will have access to menu labeling.
And I would say for our program, we're continuing to focus on reducing access to sugar sweetened beverages and increasing access to water by working with local communities. Even though some of these didn't pass statewide, we can certainly have local policies that can pop up. Our other big issue is joint use of school facilities, like I had mentioned. And then I just have to say that there's a feeling that physical activity is kind of behind nutrition and that there hasn't been as much momentum around it. And there's starting to be a lot of groups that are focusing more on that messaging so that when schools are cutting, with these terrible budget crisis we're in, they don't cut their PE program. What is the message that we need to be sending to policymakers?
Hi, thanks for coming and sharing your stories. One of the common threads that I heard each of you share was the need or the success of your community engagement piece or your stakeholder engagement piece. And that brings a whole different skill set to the table that we see a lot in these workings. And so I would just be interested in your reflection on how you bring about successful stakeholder and community engagement for your initiatives.
Well, I'll start off. One characteristic I've seen that really works is if you're the facilitator or part of that team, you have to outreach. You have to bend over backwards to get, not necessarily to make all the stakeholders happy, but just to get them to the table and start the dialogue. And that just doesn't end with the first visit. It requires sustenance along the way, and that might be minutes of meetings, it might be reminder notes, both electronically and hard copy, whatever it takes to kind of keep them together, and then the momentum flows from there. Especially if you have a common goal everyone buys into or someone at least knows, they may not be getting the lion's share of what's gonna happen, but one of their own goals or something in for them, is it might happen, even if it's a small thing.
Let them share the successes and also give them, even if they don't do a lot of work, give them the credit. Share the credit with them and just listen to what they have to say and give them credit and give them the opportunity to participate.
I'd like to say that for us, it's been really helpful to have that presence in community events. Just go in there without an agenda and really talk to people as people and really see what's going on. We have identified some great champions from the community that they may not know public health, but they know their community and they know how to take that message to other folks. Word of mouth is huge in community work. And also there are some best practice models like community-based participatory research that from the very beginning you involve the researchers and the community at all stages of the planning, development, and implementation. So in some cases, you may start with a CBPR in your community, but I would say the skills come in making that investment and being in the community.
And shared power.
Yes.
We found the same things that you're saying. And we've actually even had staff now placed in communities that are doing a lot of work that we're doing, so that they are part of the community and are seen that way and they know who those key leaders
Some of us like do-overs, or if we could fix one thing that we didn't do it a certain way the first time, we might have done it differently the second time. Any thoughts? Nice and loud.
Yeah, that one comes to the top of my mind. We used to be working school by school trying to make changes when we used to engage youth and talk to food service directors and just realized we really needed to work at a higher level, at the school board level, and that's when we really started focusing our efforts to that. You know, school board members set the vision for the district and could support what was going on, and we found a lot of champions.
And I would say insist on accountability and insist on consequences if the law isn't being enforced. There were no consequences to ours. We were just counting on the kindness of strangers. So, but on the other hand, too, it only takes one advocate in a school. If it's a parent, or if it's a principal, or the counselor, or a PE person, one advocate to say, you know what, there's a legislation here, we're not adhering to it, we need to be compliant with the law.
And never underestimate the power of the food industry.
Loudly, listen. Never underestimate the power of the food industry, if it's a nutrition or related item.
And to us, it's been, you know, we're so good at collecting data and letting people know, look at all the problems we have in your community, that we've learned, have heard from community. We have some great community assets and values, and we have some great capacity to take care of ourselves. So sure, let us know what's wrong, but also share all the good things that are going on in community, all the good opportunities, resources, and possibilities. So we've learned that lesson when we do our presentations and community meetings.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming, and I'm sorry I missed the first presentation, but I did catch the last two, and very inspiring. You both started with establishing a coalition and getting a legislative champion. My question is this, once legislation gets introduced, you know, that sausage making process can spin out different amendments to it, different compromises. I'm from Arizona, and I think it's safe to say we have a rather unique legislature compared to the rest of the nation. And you may have heard it. But my question is, you know, how did you keep your coalition together when you may have had individual members willing to make a compromise on something where others did not? I'm just kind of challenged on how you might have surmounted that. And again, very good accomplishments. Thank you very much.
For a little bit, you know, you had a coalition and it was sort of called that, but we had different partners who were, I think at a time they were getting funding from foundations too, and the foundation was strategically thinking about all the work in California, and this group, you know, should be focused on legislation and we'll fund Project Clean for this, so and they brought us together, so I think it's a little bit different than a coalition which was directed by the funding, and the funding kept coming, which was a good thing.
For us, it was about relationships, about working together. The whole was greater than the sum of its parts. And I'll never forget a phrase that someone taught me. They said, Marion, always remember this. Everything is relationships. And if you forget that, remember, relationships are everything. So it was just the give and take and the commitments. And we had, in 2002, we failed miserably 2 years in a row. So we had to get this done.
For us, and I know you said you missed the presentation, but for us in creating an Office of Health Disparities and a Minority Health Advisory Commission, very key was to have that bipartisan, and now there are other very important parties in play here, but to get all the players, and once you go through the process of learning about the issues and even the commission itself to be educated, they were working great together in contacting policymakers from their party and even other parties that were part of their districts. So, you know, sometimes we tend to be just focus on one party, but it takes a little bit longer educating and coming together, but that part was really fruitful for us.
And I hear you loud and clear, because you're going down with a basic initial agenda, and then in the legislative process, it's getting amended or may have a whole new look to it by the time it gets to final vote. And part of this, which was not said, is that hanging in there, you know, rolling with the punches, being a little bit flexible, but staying with it. And sometimes you may come to the point where, gee, is a half a step forward worth getting now that we can then do two or three steps afterwards later or not? Sometimes it comes to that decision if you feel that it's going in a whole different direction than when it started. A small gain may be better than no gain, or getting your foot in the door might set you up for something bigger and better down the road. One rule of thumb in a different state that we used to have, and actually it's been applicable to other jurisdictions I've been in and primarily different states, is think of a three-year process. None of us wants to be in it that long, but that's the way it is. Think of a three-year process. Year one is floating this first initiative and getting the politicians to learn about it. Don't plan to get it passed. Just plan to educate. And then year two, the bill comes up, and that's maybe the year to have a real strong proponent carrying the legislation or not. But then, you know, kind of getting it out there to see if nothing else, people are now a little bit familiar with it. So maybe they can, you know, they'll still say no this time around. And then by the third time, it's not necessarily three strikes, you're out, but it is the process. The third time, now the person who carries it is well recognized, almost stereotyped as that legislator is, you know, Mr. Nutrition or Ms. Organization or whatever it may be. And not that you've worn them down, but I think that they're much better educated and they understand the issue more, and you've been able to bring more partners to the table, demonstrated that, oh yeah, my constituency, they vote for me, does want this, and suddenly it happens. Doesn't have to be the three-year rule, but I've seen that happen an awful lot if the issue is brand new or very controversial to start with. Those two.
Can I just give you a story you remind me of?
Nice and loud.
We were trying to get soda out of schools, and like I said, it took many years. I remember the lobbyist from the Association of California School Administrators. After the seventh year, he went up there and he testified and said, you know what, I am so tired of you guys asking us to get soda out of schools. What do you want? Just tell us and we'll do it. And like you said, it was just tired of the energy that it took. And then the other thing is when we set nutrition standards. I mean, a committee of RDs, you know, around the table trying to agree on what the nutrition standards were. It was no easy task. And so our nutrition standards for schools in California aren't really a definition of what's healthy. They just limit most of the worst offenders. And we had to be okay with that as a small step forward. And we're still living with those standards, so I'd like to see them be stronger. But it is baby steps.
Any other questions? Yes.
I'm wondering if there was money attached for the water systems, or that was just stuff that was every school independently had to put those in.
You mean in the bill? No, because if we would have, if there was money attached, it would have never gone through. Anything this year that had money didn't go through. There is, speaking of watering down, and no pun intended, but there was something added at the very end that helped the bill go through that said unless a school district can justify in writing that they cannot financially do that. So we'll see how that pans out.
Hi there. Thanks for the presentations. They're really interesting. I have a question specifically for Marion. You had mentioned that you actually weren't able to look at compliance or monitoring very closely. And you were from California and have spent quite a bit of time evaluating the monitoring compliance of the food and beverage legislation that passed there. And we spent some time putting together a tool on how to monitor it. So I'm wondering, have you been able to monitor whether the vending machines actually have turned over to 100% healthy? And if so, what have you found?
Well, we tried in Shelby County, the Memphis City Schools. And I wrote a proposal to Robert Wood Johnson, made the first cut, didn't make the second cut. And then there was something with the school, the food service director kind of got indicted, you know. So we were not able to monitor it. We had the whole system worked out. We were going to, you know, they have scan cards. We were going to have the whole system for evaluating. But we never got a chance to do it. But we do know the obesity rates have not declined. Of course, the benzene is just one small part of it, but I mean, this is just a lesson learned. Right now, we're trying to make sure there are advocates in each school to make sure it's enforced.
Could your parent and your student get up on it?
Oh, absolutely. I think the parent, it just takes one parent to do it.
And,
so I'd be interested to see your evaluation form.
We have quite a publication.
And there's a take-home message there, too, that also dovetails to some of the other questions, and that is, what's your environment at the time, your political environment? Now, we're coming off low sales tax, a semi-recession, whatever you want to call it, and certainly there's a lot of hurt out there. So you heard California's legislative initiative, if there was any dollar attached to it, forget it right off the bat. And then here was a political kind of the management slash question mark issue, I won't go into embezzlement, but whatever the case may be, you know, that clouds the picture, and here, that's the environment around with which you're trying to achieve your goal and your health advocacy for health, hopefully a positive health outcome. So it can be a rocky road. We've all been there, and we're gonna continue to go through those. Well, I'm gonna thank the panel. And would you join me in doing that, please?